Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning. This is J.R. Moore coming to you live from deep in the mountains in the Missouri Ozarks. On Tuesday, the 8th day of March, year of our Lord, 2011. Welcome to the John Moore Show. Going straight to the markets, oil futures, there's different oil futures markets. I should point this out. There's NYMEX, there's Brent. There's probably others I'm not necessarily aware of. Brent crude oil yesterday for April delivery closed at $15.04. $115.04 a barrel. The Dow Jones Industrial Averages yesterday closed down $79.85, closing at $12,090.03. Gold right now in London is trading up $3.90 an ounce, trading at $1,434.90 an ounce. And silver is trading up 50 cents an ounce at $36.35 an ounce. Well, we got a funny story here. This guy goes into a bar on the 10th floor of a hotel. He sits down and has a couple of drinks and stands up and announces loudly that he's had enough to drink, goes over and jumps out the window of the 10th floor of the hotel. There are two men sitting by at the window table and having a natural human curiosity about the grotesque, they watch as a man plummets to certain death. However, just as he's about to hit the ground, he rights himself, pulls his feet underneath him, and lands gracefully. Then he turns and comes back into the building. Naturally, the two men are amazed. The guy goes back into the bar, orders a few drinks, then repeats the process. The two men at the window seat are astounded. Then the guy returns and repeats the process again. The two men stop him before he jumps and ask, how on earth does he do that? He replies, it's simple. There's a powerful air vent down by the ground, and when you catch the updraft, you can right yourself and land on the ground with no problems. Then he proceeded to jump out the window again. Well, these two men just decided they had just to try this out, so they jumped out the window and splat. They made a mess. I'll get to the punchline at the end of the break here. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Tuesday, the 8th day of March. Anyway, I was telling this funny story here. These two guys, they jump out the window and they splat, making a mess on the ground. Meanwhile, the first guy who had successfully jumped three previous times, he goes back up to the bar and he sits down and orders drinks, and the bartender says, Superman, you can be a real stinker when you're drunk. Okay, funny story of the day. Vaccinations. The country of Japan has halted vaccines from drug maker Pfizer. They had four deaths of otherwise healthy children within 1 to 3 days of these children getting vaccinated with vaccines made by Pfizer and Sanofi Aventis of France. This was a vaccine administered for what purpose here? Meningitis and other infections, it says. Okay, and pneumonia, meningitis, and other infections is what these vaccines allegedly were for. The more I learn about vaccines, the more I'm absolutely convinced that human beings should not participate in that. It's just simply not a very good thing. If you want your children to have autism, get them vaccinated. That's the bottom line. The populations that don't get vaccinations, such as the Amish, guess what? They have no autism. There are some exceptions. The children of those unfortunate Amish parents who decide to get their children vaccinated, they're the only ones who do get autism. Let's move on from there. Article from Science Daily, no such thing as a dormant volcano, Magnet chambers awake sooner than thought. Originally published in the journal Nature, dated 3 March 2011. Well, apparently, once a volcano shuts down, it's not necessarily dormant for centuries. You have a photograph here of Mount Pinatubo in the Philippines, which now has a lake in the bottom of the crater. I was in the Philippines 3.5 years ago. They just reopened the airport that the it was an air base, U.S. military air base, that had been given to the Philippine government because it had 10 feet of ash from Mount Pinatubo. It took that long, a better part of 20-something years, to clean out the 10 feet of ash and put the air base back into service. What a monumental task that was, much diesel fuel did it consume. These volcanoes are serious things. If you have friends or relatives that live up in the Pacific Northwest, there's something called the Cascade Mountains up there. They aren't mountains, ladies and gentlemen. They're all volcanoes. The Cascade Mountains are, in fact, volcanoes. Speaking of the Pacific Northwest, there was a 4.8 earthquake and then a 4.9 earthquake, which is double the strength. This happened yesterday. Day before yesterday, the 6th, is about 260 miles west of Yachich, Oregon, out in the ocean, about 6.2 miles beneath the seafloor. The third quake happened a little bit after that, the first two, registered a 3.9. Now keep in mind, the Richter scale was reduced by one full number value in the mid-1980s, shortly after Charles F. Richter, who developed the Richter scale, died. So on the original Richter scale, those would have been a 5.8, 5.9, and a 4.9 on the original Richter scale. That's some pretty serious, pretty heavy magnitude earthquakes. I stopped by a friend's office yesterday. He's an attorney and a friend, a brilliant attorney, I might add. His primary business is helping other lawyers turn losing civil cases into winners. And he's very good at that, and his counsel is sought out. So I was in the break room there, and his 19-year-old daughter, or excuse me, 20-year-old daughter was there, and we were sitting and having coffee and talking about different things. And she was telling me how she can't afford to move out of her parents' home yet, and we started talking about that. She mentioned how she makes $400 a week gross, and her net is about $200. So I started telling her the reason why she can't move out, and I used the example of my own life and the situation that I went through 45 years ago, graduated from high school. I got my first job working for a commercial construction company, doing commercial concrete work, making pre-stressed beams for bridges and things of that nature. It was entry-level employment. My gross pay was right at $110 a week, sometimes a little more if I had some overtime. My net was about $100 a week. The government took about 8 or 9% of my paycheck. And I asked her, I said, well, you know, if this was 1966 and you were making $400 a week, your gross, your net would be about $360, maybe a little bit more, maybe $365 a week. And she said, well, if that was the situation, I would be able to afford to move out and have my own place. And I went on to explain to her how for $100 a week, well, how a young man could live in 1966. I could get an apartment, not a real upscale apartment, but a clean, decent place in a safe part of town for probably $75 to $80 a month. I could buy a used car from a Ford dealer or a Chevy dealer or a Plymouth dealer, not some fly-by-night dealership, but a real new car dealership, a decent used car that would be serviceable and that you wouldn't have to be embarrassed to drive it for $100. For $100. My tuition at the local junior college would have been about $200 to $300, depending on how many course hours and so forth, and books may have cost $40 to $50. Maybe. That would be expensive back then for books. And point being, ladies and gentlemen, you know, we hear so much about how young people are living with their parents well into their 20s, sometimes even 30s these days, and this is the reason why. It's the tax code. it's not that young people don't want to be on their own. They still have that desire, as young people have always had, to be independent young adults, have their own apartment, be self-sufficient, and so forth. The tax code prevents people on entry-level wages from being able to do that. They simply can't do that on entry-level wages. And that's the situation we find ourselves in. The dollar, of course, has lost a tremendous amount of its value. If you're listening to the spots there before the show started on the break, talking about how much value the dollar's lost since 1913, I'm old enough to remember gasoline selling for 10 cents a gallon, as it was before I was driving. By the time I was driving, I was paying typically 15, 16 cents a gallon for gasoline. That would have been 1964 when I was paying 15, 16 cents a gallon for gasoline. I paid less than 20 cents a gallon for gasoline as late as 1969. Less than 20 cents a gallon as recently as 1969. I recall that very specifically. So what's changed? Has the value of the petroleum products changed? No. There's a lot that plays into that. Taxation, for example, the tax on a gallon of gasoline now, I think, is edging up towards 40 cents a gallon in Missouri. It varies state by state because there's state taxes and federal taxes both on petroleum products. Greed plays a big role in it. I have a friend who owns a small oil company. He's got maybe 20 employees or so, a retail petroleum company. And we were having lunch not too long ago, and I asked him, I said, how come diesel fuel is now costing more than gasoline? It's always been less expensive for as long as I could remember. And he says, well, John, two reasons. One, greed. Number two, they can do it. And that's where we are, ladies and gentlemen. A lot of what's going on here with these petroleum prices is nothing more than that simple two-part question and two-part answer, I should say. Why are these petroleum products going up so dramatically? Number one, greed. Number two, they can do it. Petroleum is the second most plentiful liquid on the planet. That's a scientific fact. Petroleum is the second most plentiful liquid on this planet. The Gulf of Mexico by itself, the oil reserves in the Gulf of Mexico by itself could supply the entire planet at current rates of consumption for a century. At least for a century. We have enough propane, natural gas. Propane is a derivative of natural gas. We have enough natural gas in Alaska alone to supply the world for a century. And this is just the tip of the iceberg. We're now finding massive oil reserves all over the planet. All over the planet. And it's kind of funny. I did a guest appearance on Genesis last night. We were talking about these matters. And we got a break. You all stay tuned. We'll be right back.
John Moore is taking your telephone calls right now on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Pick up the phone and join in the conversation. Call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443. And thanks for listening to RBN.
All right. Welcome back to CCL. This Tuesday, the 8th day of March. At the top of the hour, we will have a special guest, my friend Lucas, and we'll be talking about the video that he produced It's been on YouTube now for several years. The most watched video ever on YouTube. I say again, the most watched YouTube video ever. And we'll be talking about that and events of 9/11 beginning at the top of the hour. I was talking about, before the break, my visit yesterday with the daughter of my friend, a 20-year-old young woman who is getting her young life and career underway. She is getting an education to become a psychologist. That's her goal, and she's a very bright young woman. I'm sure she'll achieve her goal, all things being equal. And the struggles that young people are going through today, we being us older adults, we tend to flippantly blame the youngsters for not leaving their parents home. Well, that's not accurate. That's not the way it is at all. We, the adults, through Congress, we've created a situation that makes it extremely difficult for young people to get out on their own with entry-level wages. And we've done that with the tax code. The tax code is one of the single largest ways to manipulate behavior in society that's ever been devised, the tax code. It is truly amazing, absolutely truly amazing. That combined with the depreciating dollar has put these youngsters in a situation where they're stuck being at home in their mid to late 20s, sometimes even in their 30s. They just give up the thought of even being an independent person. That's so sad and so tragic, but that is the way it is. I continue to get information from my various contacts and sources. And I'll tell you, ladies and gentlemen, the information I'm getting from private sources in various militaries, our military, the Canadian military, Europe, and so forth, it's pretty scary stuff. I think I can make a general observation based on the information I'm getting. Time is short. You need to get prepared. You need to get ready now. Being away from major metropolitan areas, I believe, would be a wise thing. The prospect of major American cities being targets of an attack is a clear and present danger. Now, on Patriot Radio, people immediately want to talk about, oh, is it going to be a false flag operation? Is it going to be the powers that be? Is it going to be Islamic terrorists? Is it this? Is it that? Well, those things are interesting and fascinating to ponder on one hand. On the other, does it really matter? Us barefoot peasants, like myself and all of you listening to me, us barefoot peasants have to deal with the consequences, don't we? Oh, I see we have a caller here. Dave in Canada. Good morning, Dave.
Good morning, John.
Well, welcome aboard.
I'm so happy to hear you up in the morning now. You got a morning job, ha ha.
And you get to sit at home with coffee.
Well, I'm sitting having a coffee, but oh boy, I'm so happy now that I can turn around and sit out in the porch and watch the creatures wake up and listen to you, my favorite.
All right.
But anyhow, you were bringing back some fond memories. When I started to drive in 1972, gas was 33 cents a gallon. I could fill up my '68 Chevy pickup truck for $3.30. Today it cost me $100 to fill it up. And right now in Canada, we're paying $5.85 for regular gas, over $6 for mid-range and high test. So we're talking about $30 for 5 gallons or $60 for 10 gallons of gas. And we could see that doubling in no time.
I agree. Yes, you bring to mind, my Volkswagen Beetle cost me $3 to fill up from empty, and it cost me $9 to drive from St. Louis to the East Coast, about 900 miles.
John, I went through my paperwork, believe it or not. In 1967, I was looking at a 650 Bonneville when I was only about 11 years old.
Okay.
To buy it, okay? Well, I was digging through the papers. You wouldn't believe what I found. A Volkswagen Beetle, I got a bill or a receipt from a person that showed the absolute taxes included was $1,800 up here in Canada in 1967 for a brand new Volkswagen Beetle.
Well, a brand new Jaguar XKE sports car, hand built, 150 mile an hour Jaguar sports car in 1967. The sticker price was $5,000.
Yeah.
I know. And you tell young people this today, look at you like you got two heads, you know.
Exactly. But no, I can fully understand where that friend of yours, the daughter, is coming from.
It's tough.
My children right here now. When I started to drive, I got.
Hold on, Dave. Hold on. We got a break. Everybody, okay. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Ladies and gentlemen, we're back. This is J.R. Moore. It is I keep wanting to say Sunday. This is Tuesday, the 8th day of March. Freeze-Dried Guy does not yet have a March special. I hope he does soon. But in the meantime, you can go shopping at his website, freezedryguy.com. Check out all the freeze-dried food, dehydrated food, the preparedness items that he offers at his website, freezedryguy.com. There's a link from my website, thelibertyman.com. His toll-free number is 866-404-3663. I say again, 866-404-3663. After you make your selection, you're ready to place your order. If you want expedited shipping, talk to Freeze Dry Guy personally. Let him know you heard about his products on the John Moore Show and you want expedited shipping. He's got plenty of food in stock, but they are running into administrative delays with just the sheer volume of orders. That's where we are right now, just an unprecedented number of orders. And my website is thelibertyman.com. We have a new sponsor on my website, ZapWorks, ZapWork Batteries. If you want electricity at your farm, at your ranch, at your home, you need to consider the Edison batteries, the nickel iron alkaline batteries offered by ZapWorks. You can get all the details there at my website, thelibertyman.com. Also, check out my new 2-DVD set, Global Warming, What the Government Isn't Telling You. If you want to wake up friends and relatives as to what's really going on in the world, my 2-DVD set is certainly a way to do that. At my website, thelibertyman.com. I do have a toll-free number, auto line, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 800-592-9543. And Dave, are you still there, sir?
Yes, sir.
Well, we've been visiting, but it's time to get down to some things more serious. I noticed I was having coffee with my wife in a restaurant, and there was a news broadcast about preparing for flooding in the northern part of the United States. You and I were talking about that 2 months ago, weren't we?
Yes, sir. January 24th, I called you in the morning, and January 26th, that we were really, really worried. Now, I look at the flooding up here in Canada, and like everything flows downhill, so everybody in the northern states is going to get hit with what we've got up here. But Manitoba is a real concern for those people in the Red River Valley in North Dakota, or anything around the Dakotas, should take warning. The Assiniboine River and the Red River are still at their maximum peaks at their floodgates. Now, the big 90s flood in Manitoba, only one river breached its banks. These two are both ready to breach their banks. But the big concern, and this is what we're running into in Ontario and all northern Canada, we didn't get much of a snow load this year, only in certain parts. So therefore, our frost went down very, very deep in the ground, and it's like a frozen ice cube, and it will not thaw out to allow any of the water to absorb. So everything's going to wash out like mudslides, dirt slides, everything is not going to absorb. So
I remember you telling me that the ranchers were moving cattle and different things to high ground, weren't they?
all their horses, all their cattle have been, and all their feed have been moving out since January. They've been trying to dig out ditches through frozen ground, chipping, doing everything. They're even building dikes still as of we're talking today. And they're moving like Mach 3 with their hair on fire to try and prepare for the flooding. And it still does not look good.
And they've been doing this preparation since
January.
End of January.
Well, yeah, exactly. The middle of January.
Middle of January. It's kind of funny and ironic because I had this heads up from you, and then I'm sitting in a restaurant about 10 days ago, and they're talking about it as if it's brand new information that they never heard about before.
Well, this is it. But even last year, if the people go back on your old archives in July, August, and September, we were talking, you and I, about the cold weather coming down. I remember one calling up in Texas and saying, oh, would we ever get freezing weather down in Texas? And you said, well, it's quite possible. And look at Mexico. They've frozen their vegetables.
So right. The worst wipeout of vegetables and fruits since they've been keeping records there in Mexico.
Exactly. But anything around the Great Lakes, people in Detroit, Michigan, Buffalo, New York, Boston, please take warning. Get up into high grounds. If you're in a low floodplain, at least make preparations that you can grab your valuables and move to high land. Get an exit route where you're crossing a lot of bridges because they could possibly be washed out with the floods coming down.
Well, a lot of people may not have that option, so that their option would be to evacuate before they had to cross those low-lying areas.
Exactly. Exactly, but you know, the only thing you can do is plot out an escape route, like you do. Your show is great for preparation. People listen and prepare. But anyhow, John, that's the flood update. Keep your heads up and keep an eye on the rain.
All right.
We're getting rains on Thursday, so that even means more flooding down towards you guys. And what I'll do is I'll send you an email or talk to you on the landline.
Okay. I appreciate that. Well, is that it for today, Dave?
That is it.
Okay, well, we appreciate your update. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, John. Bye.
Okay, that was Dave from Canada, a regular caller. The call number is 800-313-9443. We had an update on my Sunday show from Australia, a gentleman who lives in Western Australia. That was interesting to hear about the grain-growing belt down there where they grow excellent grain in Western Australia. These shows here on Republic Broadcasting are truly international in nature. They truly are. Yesterday I had my journalist friend Alexander Bachman from Mexico on the air. We talked privately yesterday afternoon. And the things I'm hearing from my various sources around the planet and around the country are very disturbing. This calendar year, 2011, the things I'm hearing from private, reliable sources are very disturbing, to say the least. If I was not as prepared as I am, I would be quite concerned, knowing the things that I know, finding out the things I'm finding out. A topic came up the other day about where do you go, and a lot of people have financial shortcomings, shall we say, and financial limitations that they feel like they may not be much they could do. Here's a book titled Bug Out, The Complete Plan for Escaping a Catastrophic Disaster Before It's Too Late by Scott Williams. And he has a country split up into 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 different areas, the lower 48. I'll give you the ISBN number on this book. It's a well-done book. It's a quick read by Ulysses Press. Here's the ISBN number. I'll give it twice slowly. 978-1-56975-781-9. And one more time, the ISBN number. 978-1-56975-781-9. The title of the book is Bug Out, by Scott Williams. He gives very detailed plans and discussion on using public lands as a safe haven. It would not be my first choice, however, if it's a choice between having a safe haven on public lands and no safe haven at all, well, obviously that's what you would need to do. Well done book, and it's very unique. I'm not aware of any book that covers this topic in the same way. When it comes to preparedness, men quickly gravitate towards protecting what they love, their spouses and children, and it usually involves firearms, of course. Women quickly turn to the more practical things of growing food, preserving food, preparing it to eat, the shelter, the things involving shelter and sanitation, routine matters like doing laundry. How do you do laundry when you don't have hot and cold running water under 40 pounds pressure? Practical things like that women tend to concern themselves with. Men and women both generally don't understand or appreciate the topic of communications like it should be understood. That's been my observation. People have some notions that can really lead to problems very quickly. And one of them is thinking that mom and dad, two adults, can cover security at a homestead 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 168 hours, ladies and gentlemen. That's not going to happen. Two adults are not going to cover 168 hours a week, every week, indefinitely. That's not going to happen. You need a number of reliable adults. Six would be an absolute minimum. 10 or 12 would be certainly much better. Once you get up to around 10 or 12 adults, that 168 hours can be split up between the adults, and people can still have a more or less normal life and cover those late night hours between 10 p.m. and 6 a.m. It's burdensome, to say the least. It's absolutely burdensome to have, and you would think that two adults or even four adults can cover that amount of time and still be normal in terms of their health and their mental attitude. You don't need hundreds and hundreds of acres. You really don't, at least here in the Arkansas-Missouri Ozarks. A few acres, even 5 acres, for example, 3 acres. A garden 100 feet by 100 feet is a large garden. It's 1,000 square feet. So, actually, that's more than that, 100. That's 10,000 square feet. Excuse me, I got the decimal point in the wrong place. 10,000 square foot garden will feed a fairly good-sized family if you know what you're doing. Get your heritage garden seeds now. I was going to become I am a dealer for heritage garden seeds, but it's just I got too much on my plate right now to carry the inventory and do everything that's necessary to do that and do it right. If I can't do it right, I'm not going to do it. But Baker Creek Seeds down in Mansfield, Missouri, Baker Creek Seeds is one of the larger heritage garden seed companies in the United States. They have a huge variety of heritage non-GMO garden seeds. We're coming up on the spring planting season now for gardens. Even if you're living in an apartment, you can get a 5-gallon bucket, get some soil and put it in there, some good quality soil, maybe potting soil, just some good black dirt, and grow some tomatoes in a 5-gallon bucket on the balcony or the porch of your apartment, even if you live in a city. You can't learn how to garden out of a book. If you think you can, well, you're wrong. The time to get started gardening is now. There's no excuse. Even like I say, apartment dwellers can start gardening in 5-gallon buckets. You live in a city, you can take a plot of land, maybe 10 by 10 feet, that would be 100 square feet, and starting a garden there. Whatever it takes. Get your soil tested. You need to know if it's alkaline or acid. You need to know what supplements it may need. I do offer all-natural fertilizer at my website, by the way, the Agrand brand of natural fertilizers made from fish and potash and things like that with no harmful chemicals in it. Just get out there, get your hands in the dirt, and get started. I mean, there's no substitute for getting out there and doing it. It's a skill that most urban dwellers these days no longer have, unfortunately. We are now about two generations separated from being close to the soil, close to the land, most Americans. I had Linda Runyon on my Sunday show a few weeks back. Linda Runyon is a specialist in wild edibles. I've come to realize that out here in the Ozarks, I am literally surrounded by wild edibles. Literally. There's just all kinds of things available to harvest and eat out here in the Ozarks. And in most of the country, the same thing is true. She, in her publications, in her deck of survival cards and DVDs, she goes through in great detail how to identify wild edibles, harvest them, prepare them to eat, prepare them for long-term storage, things like that. And it's an education. You may find in your local area a person who specializes in wild edibles that may even give some seminars. I know we have people in my area that do that. And where would you find such people? Well, your local health food store might be a good resource to find a person who specializes in wild edibles in your area. They may conduct classes or seminars or weekend retreats, any number of different ways that you can educate yourself about wild edibles. Men tend to gravitate towards, well, I'll shoot a deer. We went through this 70 years ago in the Ozarks. All the deer were shot at. By World War II, there were no deer in the Ozarks. If there were, they were very lonely critters. Following World War II, the deer herd had to be reestablished. Missouri Conservation Commission did an excellent job of reestablishing the deer herd in Missouri. Now we have plentiful deer in 2011. It's been that way for several decades, on one hand. On the other, people get hungry. These deer population would be decimated and wiped out in no more than 2 to 3 years, at the most. 2 to 3 years, the deer herd would be wiped out. They're a large animal. It's fairly easy to find them and fairly easy to shoot them and harvest them. Squirrels tend to migrate, and we see in some years there'll be lots of squirrels. Others there'll be hardly any around. Rabbits, depending on the number of predators, there's more or less rabbits. Other critters can be harvested and eaten, like raccoons, muskrats. I assume you can eat a skunk if you can figure out how to get past the smell. Break coming up. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
The door.
It's time for us to face the truth with John Moore. Now, if you want to talk to John live on the air, call 1-800-313-9443. That's 1-800-313-9443.
All right, we're back. Let's go back. This is John Moore. It is Tuesday, the 8th day of March. I had lunch with a friend yesterday. He's an attorney. A lot of my friends are attorneys. The people I work with are attorneys. And he just is recently becoming part of the gun culture. Has bought his first pistol. We were talking about firearms, ammunition, different ways to carry firearms concealed. And It was a great getting caught up with him. It was about a 2-hour lunch, and actually about 2 hours and 15 minutes before he had to get back to what he was doing, and I had to get on with my day. At some point, I told him how a pistol is an implement that you use to fight your way back to your rifle or your shotgun. He does not yet own a rifle or a shotgun, and I was explaining to him the advantages of home defense of either a 12-gauge shotgun or a heavy caliber, 30 caliber rifle. And he's just a novice when it comes to all these matters, and wants to learn. He's very enthusiastic, doesn't understand a lot of the basic terminology regarding firearms that he needs to get up to speed on. He was surprised to find out that one of his associates, an attorney he's known for quite a few years, who is highly respected in Metro St. Louis for his knowledge of bankruptcy and things of that nature, Tim Mullins, is highly regarded within the gun culture and has published a number of books on firearms. Timothy J. Mullins, we call him TJ. So he was delighted to find that out, and he'll be having some conversations with TJ about firearms now, I'm sure, also. The firearms culture, the gun culture, is large and varied with a wide range of people with different interests and different aspects of the gun culture. It's not monolithic by any means. The majority of men and women involved in the gun culture are conservative, but not all. You might be surprised to find that there's some liberal thinking people in the gun culture, but there are, although they're a fairly small minority. I don't have any percentages here in front of me, but it's I rarely meet anybody, and it's part of the gun culture, who would consider themselves a progressive or a liberal or a socialist. That's an extremely rare thing. But they do exist. I've been part of the gun culture since I was a boy. I became fascinated with firearms as a boy, and that's been more than 50 years ago, more than half a century. And it's a fun thing. It's fascinating. There's a lot to learn, and things are always changing. The technology of firearms and ammunition and optics is always changing, always improving. I saw a video clip last night sent to me by a man we've been friends for 44 years now. We met in military intelligence school and served in Vietnam together. He sent me a video clip of the new improved M60 machine gun. And I was telling my wife after watching that clip how in Vietnam the M60 had a design defect that if you did not attach a beer can to the side of the M60 machine gun, the ammunition belt would seize up because it didn't have the right angle to go into the machine gun. Here's our break. We should have Lucas coming up here shortly. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.